Catriona Reynolds has emailed me a question. Also, if you have any questions, lines are taken up right now because of technical difficulties, but you can email a question to info@kbbi.org or to kathleen@kbbi.org. And Catriona would like to find out from you, Willie Dunn, what is the committee's definition for a youth member? Is it under 24 years old? Is it over 18? Is it over 6? Like, what are the... Could that person, if a youth member is over 18, could that person be a voting member?
Thank you, Catriona, for the question. Our enabling legislation does not designate an age for youth members. I think the intention was that they would be students and under 18. So basically it says the commission may appoint two non-voting youth members. Youth members shall serve one-year terms. So it's not laid out in our code, unfortunately, but high school students, I think, are certainly what we're aiming at. And there's actually no minimum age for membership either. So right now our commission is full. We have a 9-member commission, but anybody, as slots open up on the commission, anybody is able to serve them. So if there were any young members under 18 who were interested in being on the commission, if there were an opening, I would encourage them to apply and serve. But as far as our youth members, right now, we're looking at kind of aiming towards high school students.
Where exactly would a potential youth member of the commission?
There's a number of ways you could do it. Youth members are interested in being a youth member. Anyone interested is certainly willing to or happy to. I'm happy to talk to them directly, so they could contact me directly, and my information is on the borough website. Or they could contact the planning department directly by going to the borough website, kpb.us, going to the planning department and the Resilience and Security Advisory Commission website, and there's contact information there. We need to make sure the commission addresses that first and establishes those youth positions, but I'm hoping that we can do that right off the bat. And I would also like to say that I agree with Brentwood Higman that there is endless possibility here, and there's going to be a temptation to bite off way more than we might be able to chew. And so I really appreciate the idea of perhaps a prioritized list to get started with and to really focus on a few items right off the bat. And we need input from the public for that, too. Like I said, we do have some really outstanding commission members, extremely well qualified, but...
Brentwood Higman mentioned another one, Scott Waterman from here in Homer.
Yep. Scott has got a lot of
Randy
experience
Arndt.
With alternative energy and with his work at the Alaska Housing Authority. and then we also have Alexandra Ravello here in Homer. She's got a PhD in marine sciences. So we have, outstanding pool of talent on the commission.
I do want to spend the last few minutes of the program. We've got about 20 minutes left, time to talk. I want to focus on a couple of things that are listed as the commission focus points in the borough document. So I want to bring in Marcus Muller, the land management officer for the borough, and Assemblymember Dunn. I'll start with you, Assemblymember Dunn, because first on the commission focus point are landfills. So it even says that the goal is to extend the lifetime of landfills and save taxpayer dollars. How is it possible to save money on the landfill?
Well, there's lots of possibilities. Reducing the waste stream going into the landfill is one immediate way we could do that through additional recycling opportunities or reusing opportunities. We mentioned a little earlier composting, which has got a lot of potential for any organic matter to keep organic matter from going into the waste stream. And then reducing costs, I think in the long term, if we're looking at converting waste to energy, there's huge ways to reduce costs there. we can actually have a usable product, perhaps electricity, coming from our waste. So that would be a huge benefit. We've even been in conversations with the municipality of Anchorage. The municipality of Anchorage has looked at the feasibility of doing a waste to energy project up there, but they think to make it efficient or feasible, they might need even more waste coming into Anchorage. So there's a possibility of using the railroad to bring some of our waste into the Anchorage landfill and have that contributing towards energy production. And of course, these are long-term solutions and long-term things to work on, but we need to start talking about them right away.
And Marcus Mueller from Kenai Peninsula Borough, can you expand on that, or is there anything else to add to that in terms of issues facing the landfill for the borough right now?
There's certainly plenty of issues facing our landfills. We have, I think when we look out into the long range, we've got to identify those ways in which we can be strategic. Landfill operations are all about managing volumes and transporting volumes of waste, and so any opportunities that we can have to reduce the volume, as Lily said, or divert some of those waste types so that they don't have to be filling up the really valuable real estate. The most valuable real estate on the Kenai Peninsula Borough happens to be our landfills. The cost per square foot of managing those lands exceeds probably anything except for our industrial plants. The opportunities to divert or reuse waste streams, particularly to look at organic materials that are going into the waste streams and turning those into other more useful organic materials through composting processes or energy is I think really represents some real tangible values, and people will benefit from both sides of that. If we can turn liabilities into assets, that's great. And if we can reduce costs, that's great. It's a win-win.
Thanks. That's Marcus Mueller from the borough. And Caitlin Vodla, was that you wanting to interject?
Yeah,
Go ahead.
Was one of the reasons we were so excited to spearhead a community composting effort in conjunction with what the borough has at the landfill. The borough taxpayer spends about $7 million a year to bury trash. And if we could, I think about half of that is compostable material, about half of your household garbage you could divert to compost. And whether that's in the backyard or at your neighbor's chicken coop, if we can keep half of the material that we send to the landfill out of it, we can have the cost of our landfill. So that's a huge cost savings for the borough taxpayer, and also, like Marcus said, the opportunity to create a really valuable product instead of buying it at Home Depot. Compost is really valuable, and there's other boroughs around the state, such as the Mat-Su Borough, found it was in their best interest to hire a part-time person to teach landowners how to compost. That was basically their solution for saving money at their municipal landfill. And then in Anchorage, there's also someone whose job it is to figure out how to extend the life of their landfill via, diverting organic material. So there's a lot of our neighbors that we can look to figure out how to implement real practical solutions for saving money.
Thanks. That's Caitlin Vodla from Cook Inlet Keeper. And thank you for adding that into the conversation, because the whole reason I brought up the landfill is based because of your comment saying that this was not all pie in the sky. Don't you wish we could all just live on a cloud and have wind energy? So I wanted to make sure that we talked about a little more of the nuts and bolts stuff. Although, let me just say, I'm all for the wind energy. But the other thing, Penelope Haas, is there anything that you want to add to that conversation about local composting or about dealing with the landfill?
Just briefly, I think people have pretty much covered it, but just to say that there are so many models out there, successful operating models, that we could almost just take fully into our system to improve it. And it's just a matter of some group, such as this commission, focusing on figuring that out. You know, Marcus is doing a great job as the land manager and as, you know, in the planning department, but he's just one person, and so that this commission hopefully will be able to help just streamline some of these, what are actually quite common sense solutions, and just get them done. So as others have mentioned, you know, here in Alaska, there's other boroughs and cities who are leading the way on this, and we don't have to stick our necks out very far to implement what I think are tried and true solutions for the landfill.
That's Penelope Haas from Kachemak Conservation Society. And Willie Dunn, Assemblymember Willie Dunn for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. I want to move discussion to another focus point for the commission, which is food security. And can you talk a little bit about how the commission might address issues around food security for the Southern Peninsula or for the Cold Kenai Peninsula?
Sure. You know, this is an interesting topic that I've been talking with Marcus Mueller as the land manager here for almost my entire time on the assembly, really trying to support local agriculture. As everyone knows, we import a great bulk of our food here on the Kenai Peninsula. if we could do whatever we can to promote local agriculture, to increase food security, and also, you know, along with protecting the integrity of fish and wildlife habitat. A lot of people use local fish and wildlife resources as food sources, whether subsistence or recreational or commercial. So
yes, I plan to do that this evening from my freezer.
That's an important part of this factor too. This is a really big one to pull off. Like I said, I've been in conversations with Marcus for years now on how we can do this, and we've kind of made some little baby steps along the way. But I'm really hoping that this commission can help boost that along. You know, one thing I've noticed, and I've lived in this area for quite a few years, and of course, as residential development increases, we seem to be losing some of our agricultural land. I live out East End Road, and I've been seeing the hay fields being turned into residential subdivisions, and you know that it's easy. The hay fields are typically flat and well drained and easy access, and so they make for and often they're already cleared and have a good view, so they're desirable as residential development. But every time a new house or new subdivision goes into a hayfield, we're losing some of our local agricultural capacity, and we're supporting additional hayfields by borough leases in some of the outlying areas. But you know, instead of pushing agriculture farther and farther out of the developed communities, I would love to see some way to have incentives to keep our existing hay fields and agricultural lands and integrate those into our residential communities. So, you know, that's one idea that I hope to help explore on the commission.
Thanks, Willie Dunn. And Caitlin Vodla from Cook Inlet Keeper. I know that Inlet Keeper sponsors or works on a food hub for that very purpose, to help increase food security.
Yeah, we operate the food hub across the bay and in Homer and Nanilchik and in Solgatna, and we're hoping to expand to other communities. It's a great way for local farmers and makers to connect with local people who want to eat great local food. It's just one additional way that you can eat more local food and that we all can increase food security. Actually, our local foods director, Robbie Mixon, just hosted with the Alaska Food Policy Council a really terrific food conference this past weekend, where folks from all over the state of Alaska, from tribes, from other agencies, came together to brainstorm food solutions to increase food security and food sovereignty It's a really important issue, always has been, but especially now in the middle of a pandemic, when we're experiencing so many changes in Alaska, you know, how do we make sure that we can continue to fish, that we can continue to pick berries and can grow what we need here, so that we can be prepared.
Thanks so much. That is Caitlin Vodla from Cook Inlet Keeper. And then I'm going to get to Penelope Haas here in just a minute, but I want to move on to another topic because it's about time to wrap up. And that is one of the focus points listed is hazard mitigation planning. And that's not so much, help me understand, this is not so much for, say, a tsunami, but for things like changing environmental conditions.
Yeah, that's right. One of the focus areas is support hazard mitigation for that accounts for changing environmental conditions. And, you know, we've seen tremendous changes on the Kenai Peninsula. everybody remembers the summer of 2019, the wildfires that were just devastating, not only to you know, air quality and certain environmental issues, but to our economy, to our business. It really hurt the tourism economy that summer. We had that same summer, the city of Seldovia nearly ran out of water. Their reservoir nearly dried up, and the community of Nanwalek experienced the same thing. So we were shipping bottled water over on the ferries and on private vessels across from Homer over to Seldovia and Nanwalek due to the dry climate and the lack of the reservoirs filling up. So this is a really tough one to deal with. I think identifying those hazards that are a result of changing environmental conditions first. We've got some really good background work. It's on our website that identifies the changes in rainfall, in snowpack, the increases in temperature, and all of those factors that are changing our environment as we watch. So those are going to be some really challenging ways to identify ways to mitigate some of those, but they're incredibly important.
So I'm go
this
ahead.
This is Penelope. Can I just jump in, Kathy?
Go ahead.
That list that's on the borough website is such an important list that actually the Conservation Society, the Catchment Bay Conservation Society, started putting this together at the phase when we were at the comp plan, and we presented that a list quite similar to that to the planning department to say, look at all these changes that we have documented from local scientists, you know, local scientists from the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, from NOAA, from NERS. It's all right here. People have been monitoring lots of changes. And actually, we really feel like that this gap between the data that we have and the policies that we have is one of our biggest opportunities. There is a lot of information about the changes to our environment, such as, you know, as the winters get warmer and we have more rain, you have more flash flooding. That's a documented change. We also have greater rates of erosion, partially because of more water coming down. We have less snowpack, so the streams that are anadromous, that have fish in them, aren't getting that cold water trickling in as much. We have a drying peninsula that's more and more at risk to fire. And there's already people who are focused in on hazard mitigation in the borough. I mean, we have a hazard mitigation plan, but the angle that is different for this commission, and we talked to the mayor about this at great length, you know, before this commission was passed, is what is different about this commission relative to the people already working on hazard mitigation is this very focused attention to what is changing and making sure that we are ready and looking forward. We're drawing lines into the future and saying, nope, this is not a blip. This is not just one warm summer. This is a series of summers getting warmer and warmer, or this is not just one wet winter. This is, you know, from 1940 to now, we can see, you know, at the airport, they're keeping track of the temperatures, and the winters are now 7 degrees warmer. So we need to, that's our new normal. And so this commission has this very specific focus on looking at those trends and using our local science and turning it into policy. I'm really excited about this part of it.
Thanks, Penelope. That's Penelope Haas from Kachemak Bay Conservation Society. And this has been the Coffee Table. I'll be going around for some brief final comments. Marcus Mueller first and Willie Dunn. I'd like to hear from both of you about... So tomorrow there's a Zoom meeting that anyone can participate in and give public comment on the Resilience and Security Commission. But Marcus Mueller, what happens after tomorrow?
So tomorrow is really that initial formation meeting. And then after that, the commission, I guess even during that, the commission starts to really define itself, starts to create its own identity and talk about how it's going to take these matters up and how it's going to wrestle with things and collect ideas, and how it's going to approach work products, how it's going to approach advising the assembly and advising the administration.
Thanks.
So,
that's
it's going to be exciting times.
I'm excited too. Thanks. That's Marcus Mueller from Kenai Peninsula Borough Land Management Office. And Willie Dunn, I do want to ask about what happens with the commission after tomorrow, but also how can people keep up on this? Are there going to be notes posted in a specific place as the commission meets? Can you talk about how people can stay in touch?
Sure. People can stay connected a number of ways. Probably the easiest way is through the planning department website, kpb.us. Go to the planning department and then go to the Resilience and Security Advisory Commission. And I will be giving updates via our borough assembly meetings. I'm hoping that we can have a social media presence. I know the borough administration has a number of different social media outlets for those kinds of things. So I'm hoping to work with them on keeping people updated that way. So, and it's going to be a monthly meeting. This is not a temporary work group. This is a permanent long-term commission, which
that was my next question.
Really, really important. I've been involved with several work groups over the past 5 years that meet and come up with ideas, and then those ideas may or may not be adopted by the assembly. But this is a permanent commission that will be looking at very long-term issues. So I'm really excited about that. I only have 1 year left on the assembly before I'm termed out, but I hope to continue staying in touch with this group even after my time on the assembly terms out.
Thanks. That is assembly member Willie Dunn. Also, thanks to Marcus Mueller, land management officer for the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and to Caitlin Vodla from Cook Inlet Keeper, and Penelope Haas from Kachemak Bay Conservation Society. Thanks to everybody, and the meeting is tomorrow,
6 p.m.
Go to the borough website to find a Zoom link to get to that meeting. And we'll stay in touch. I'm really glad. Thank you all for being here. I'm especially happy about it because I like it when we can follow up. We talked about the possibility of this, and now we can follow up, and we'll check in with you guys in a few months. This
Sounds
is KBBI
great.
Homer AM 890. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. This has been The Coffee Table. The time is 10 a.m. Line 1 Health is next.